Morning. That's another walk. I think it's much warmer this morning. I don't think I even need my gloves. That's kind of nice. Oh. Well, warm anyway. Much kinder. Yesterday was a rough day. Very windy. Windy to the point where I'm picking up so much stuff that's blocking out the sun. And now I warmed up. It was in the 60s, below 60s. I didn't wear my jacket, so it affected me. I didn't go out for the afternoon walk. Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Thinking about something. Probably shouldn't even be making a recording at all. We're just thinking about stuff. Anyway. I am constantly impressed by how leaving, about how making families responsible for their members handles so many needs. With the intention that families have to become more, number one, more responsible and have to take care of themselves so much better. So I think it ends up being in the political rhetoric, and it mostly has to do with you speak a line to buy a vote. And so everything below the council level, for instance, is pandered to, seems either it's lied to or whatever else, because the only purpose such entities serve, and you can look at them as entities, is that they cast votes. And you can, and so the convenient ability, I'm not saying that somebody planned it this way particularly, but the convenient ability is that you can break everything short of a council down to an individual and then basically ignore them. Your local representative, even your local representative to the first line of government can pretty much ignore you. Powerful people have clout, and there's no a direct correlation to why that should be so. If you were being paid by that other entity, trust me, your local counselor is most beholden to the governmental level just above them that typically pays for, partially at least, their paycheck. And that if rich people have any clout at all, it's typically because that rich person has just as much, if not more, influence with those above you as you do as a councilman or councilwoman. And that's probably where most of that power is derived from, is from some kind of weird, twisted, underhanded, I'll get you sort of threat that actually kind of has a little bit of stickiness to it. If you were to get it from a regular person, you just shrug it off. You're nobody. Says, you can't touch me. Yeah, we put too much power in the hand of councils anyway. Power should be in the hands of families, where there's a natural affinity there. A council has no natural affinity, except insofar as they might want to keep their position. They might not want to look like an idiot. They might not want to be called names or something like that. All kinds of weird incentives for them to behave decently, at least publicly. And if this person is just as liable to corruption. In fact, that may be the only force that ultimately acts on them. Families are a better level within which to put this in my thing. It's windy and the sound artifact from the wind is bad. There we go. That's probably better, I guess. For all I know, it's so muffled that you can hardly hear me. Families, because of the natural affinity, the natural love that is there. Not that that can't be overcome. Literature, this desire to create conflict, most often appeals to family conflict and to the worst elements of family. your evil father, your evil uncle. Skunk going past. The domineering auntie, whatever, becomes the main protagonist. And it breeds in the culture something of an attitude of greatest need is to get clear of your family. It certainly affects me. There's rarely been literature where a father is a protector. They're usually the villain, the uncaring cad, often an ineffective, blubbering mother who tries to placate relations, who feels like a virtual slave within her own house. And this is the literature. This is what children, by and large, are exposed to. The only saintly mothers and the only saintly fathers are the ones that die when you're a small child. And they're only saintly in comparison to the horrible, unloving circumstances that come of you having to live elsewhere with other people that don't really care about you or who feel that you are burdensome to them. Which is a weird circumstance. What if you're 15, your father's still there? The literature does not present you with a hero. They present you with a evil uncle, a nasty stepfather that wants to ship you off to boarding school, blah, blah, blah. All the typical things. But you have to understand, that's the literature out there. That's the position that's painted. And we have to go a long way to combating this. And at some point way back in our past, we made a terrible mistake in denigrating the family. Most of the stars of 18th century literature are orphans for one reason or another. Some of the more dicey stuff was that you were the circumstances of your conception or birth were so embarrassing that you were cast out of the family. And when you find out that your evil nemesis really is your biological father that wanted nothing to do with you, doesn't that make a pretty picture? It seems to be almost a theme of Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens is a great writer and he's a great moralist, but let me tell you, if there was ever a person who thought little of the family and who wouldn't give a nickel for familial ties, it would be Charles Dickens. Man's two-edged sword. You can say, oh, what wonderful literature. Oh, what a wonderful thing. And you go, yeah, but this is a guy who loves the disintegration of the family. All of your problems are caused by relative squabbling. By trying to protect one's reputation and things like that. my contention that along with any kind of move toward a family-centered governance style has to be injected heavily with a panacea, a cure. I don't know what's wrong with panacea. An injection of virtue. The fathers are just going to have to stand up and rise up and be good men. That if you feel your role in your household is simply to make money and to read the evening paper in front of the television and control the remote control, you're a bad father. And if your children flee you and then treat you with derision when you're old, then that's your tough luck. I got a bad memory, so I'm not a person to but at least my concept of no, my dad was a pretty decent man. Beyond the divorce issue. My parents had an extremely difficult marriage. They were difficult people to live with. And in being so, family life was difficult, I think. My brother had his ways of handling it. I had mine. I'm not going to speak good or ill with either one of us. I don't know. I don't know if he made good choices or bad choices or whatever. I think my brother's riddled with guilt over a lot of things. And I'm sorry he has to live with that. I've tried to forgive him. I don't know how much he hears that. I don't even know what to forgive him for. Apparently he was a really atrocious brother to me, and he took it out on me. And I frankly don't remember it. It's vague. It's anything at all. Certainly does not stir any emotion in me at all. So I think I'm explaining this to him, and I don't know if that really helps or not. I think he turned out to be a pretty decent guy. Pretty good guy. I wish he was just working. I think he's had some decent work. Life is pretty good. I get the impression that his family is very much, I really don't know. I really can't. There's really no point in saying so. I know that in my family, there is a desire to distance myself from the whole situation. Distance myself from my wife's family, and I kind of distance myself from mine, although not so much so. But it passes. circumstances exist, family matters should not be public. We all have good and bad from family. I hear stories every day. I call them the end time families. In the LDS Church, the main organ of the church is a magazine called The End Time for Adults. The main church magazine for adults is called The End Time. In other countries, it's called the Lion Horn. And I think this is such a change. The focus of the magazine typically has more to do with trying to affect attitudes in the church. When I was younger, and probably until about, 4 or 5 years ago, it was about showing you a good example, which is where I come up with ensign families, and I mean they were picture perfect, you know. Quintessential LDS family. You're in your late 50s, still vibrant, still going out, you know, you're a captain of industry, your wife is a gracious hostess at your side. We both have had significant callings in the church. Your children, all your boys went on missions, all of your girls are married in the temple to return missionaries. First few kids already have little kids of their own, you're finally grandparents, knowing that you're going to get from your brood of 6 children, that within 10 years you're going to have probably 100 grandchildren. And that those big family reunions that you're going to invariably have, and where you're going to invariably get professional photographers to come and take a picture of this huge, massive group of beautiful people dressed in just all white or something like that. And that was an ensign family. And for many years, that was what was growing up kind of from the inside. They were wanting to show you a successful family. The only problem was many families reading that would compare themselves to those families and get very discouraged. Maybe one of them, surely. I mean, I've got my 6 children. Sneakiness. I've got very interesting children. I'm a very interesting person. I'm not denigrating being interesting. But our family pictures are not. You know, I don't know when I'm going to get a grandchild, if I ever do. I don't know at what point my children are going to get married. Unlike the perfect ensign family, all of my sons are not going to go and get their master's in business administration. And all of my daughters are going to get degrees in elementary education. So over the last 4, 5, 6 years, I think enough people said something to the people in charge of the magazine Or, you know, mostly what ends up being is the brothers come back and say, this is what we want this going on. And so these days, there are far less family stories, far more stories about what used to be called the prison. The interesting people. There's always been interesting people have always heard of you. It's not because it's picking them out. I think it's just circumstantial. Missionaries, interesting people, always run into each other. And sometimes very open-minded people find that people who wear business suits or nice dresses are pretty, have their mind pretty closed to restore gospel. The things they have now in the ways of religious belief or church stop them to where they are, and who on earth wants to shake up that thing. So you're not going to tend to find a lot of those kinds of people joining the LDS Church. You're going to find the radicals joining them. If you don't like tattoos, if you don't like people who have experimented with a lot of different things and a lot of different ideas, and maybe even gone to Asia and tried out being Buddhist monks or whatever else, the modern convert to the LDS Church is often this sort of a person seeking for something. And in seeking, the Spirit invariably pulls you toward the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, it's just that way. If you don't listen to the Spirit, chances are you're not going to be thinking, you're going to be too concerned about, I'm going to lose my friends, I'm going to lose my standing. The great majority of people who have such things, not just because they value those more highly than anything else, and that religious differences need to be de-emphasized. And you see that among Mormons too. Successful Mormon people often de-emphasize their religion because it does not help them to highlight religious differences. I don't have that problem. I'm not a successful person. I'm an odd person. My biggest concern is that somebody touts me as an example of a Mormon, and I would rather not be given as an example. Because I don't think I'm just such a church picker. But you know what? Maybe it is for me. Maybe it is for me. Church is coming to terms with new converts, trying to, you know, if somebody comes to church covered in tattoos, you simply sit there and go, well, they're going to go on a mission to a country that doesn't have a problem with that. Soon it's going to be America. The United States of America is going to be one of those countries that just ceases to have a problem with that anymore, because so many people have tattoos. Not that we're going to be encouraging the youth at all, but to say that we're accepting the people who want to break through for example, Jesus Christ, however they come. It doesn't change our standards at all. We expect you to live the standards from now on. But you are forgiven have passed some paths and that you have decided to find. Anyway, so maybe I should recap. I'm sitting here thinking about it. I should recap how I feel. I'm just as much a Mormon as anybody else is. Although I don't think I make an excellent example. I've got many problems. I don't want people emulating me. You know. I don't think I'd be bad. I don't think I'd be wrong. I don't think it's like, well, I'm a sinful person. You know? I'm not particularly a sinful person. I'm very ascetic. And I don't preach asceticism to anybody. It's not a requirement of the gospel. It's something that I do myself for personal reasons. And in places where my asceticism and the gospel conflict, I need to be better. I need to repent. Oh. Anyway, yeah, you know, I should change my attitude about it. So you know what, Jack? As new ensign guidelines say, you're probably as presentable of a Mormon as anybody else is. Although you do find, you know, it's still kind of a thing. The church website or the church things really highlight. Slightly a few things. It's still the old Ensign family, but with a handicapped kid dropped in. Down syndrome is a common issue. LDS families are encouraged to have as many children as they can handle. And sometimes you run into your last child, the last few children, if you're really striding, having down. Often from just old age. You know, having children beyond the time you're doing. So, you do see the Ensign still running back to perfect little families, but now this family is wonderful because they now have a handicapped child in their midst. You know, I don't remember hearing any church news praise for. It said, I don't know if there's some new content, but apparently a national news had highlighted this Mormon family who had five or six autistic children. So I'm sure the church society made a PR move to say, we don't want to highlight families who probably aren't acting with wisdom. I can't say much. You know, another reason why I say, you know what, please go away. because I don't know if I made right choices. I certainly haven't made socially acceptable choices. You know, the first time you have a handicapped child, you stop having children. I think is what society would like to see. Besides getting to the point to where it really sees children as either little trophies, or but you should only have one or two, or mostly just one. And that we are very happy with people who either A, never get married, or B, only get married and never have children, so that they can pursue their own personal goals. Stuff like that. It's always a interesting walk for the public relations people when the Mormon culture isn't too in line with current culture. I hear it talks a lot to PR people are really going, oh, this is great. We need to see interesting different people. And the fact that they're Mormons, that they're temple worthy Mormons. I'm sure it's a pendulum swing. They may be starting to swing a little too far toward the LDS Church needs to change its basic attitude about children. It needs to embrace the concept that children are verboten, or you should only have one spoiled trophy child. I know the gay is key to churches. The best thing to do is call it a flirtation. The church is flirtation with some of its more interesting members. Members who, either because they're new or because they didn't have a cultural conversion. Most of these are people that are outside of Utah. They seem to find a ton of them. It seems like the PR machine moved everything to New York City. Because, very cosmopolitan. And they're wanting to highlight very cosmopolitan people. People who don't look traditionally LDS. I'm even a worse thing for the PR people because I do look traditionally LDS except for my interest in children. I've got my problems too. But I've worked hard to mitigate them so I can fit in better society through my own personal chewing up. It's really quite interesting. And you hear comments occasionally. One that I think the church really likes to kind of bury, except that in this age of letting it all hang out, it's much more difficult to do that. The old PR guys are very much preserve the reputation of the church, you know. In the present time, the biggest reputation you want to protect is openness. You gotta be prepared for whatever comes. And the only real answer is the LDS Church. Is the vehicle of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. Anybody who wants to access that gospel will be baptized. And in doing so, they become a member of the church as long as they keep the statutes of the gospel. They are members in good standing. But members in good standing does not depend on the clothes you wear, the work you do, the home life you have, your family composition and makeup. That the incredible power of repentance comes from is that no matter what's been done in the past, I don't even know if we have a thing about people who are murdering each other. I don't know if those people are just barred from it. I'm not sure. But that would probably be the only circumstance where quite possibly something you did in the past would exclude you from being LDS. Everybody else, it gives evidence of repenting of sins in the gospel will be accepted, or should be accepted. I've always got that issue. Sometimes it's quite difficult for the people who have this vision. Sadly, I often call them Utah Mormons, and often it is highlighted about Mormon culture, which is not that nobody is expected to abide. I would tend to call that Utah culture, as opposed to Mormon culture. And, I would say, well, I can't be the happy homie, but I can't be the this and this and this. And you go, it's not a requirement that you do. Find ways to step into their appropriate role, whether it's gender-based or whether it's roles in the family. And that these cultural things are not used as the criteria for are you truly converted. Often because thinking there's a lack of expectation. Well, that there are these weird cultural expectations of how you're going to look and how you're going to behave, things like that. That hang around with them. And how we're going to react to them. And I'm probably one of the more permissive people, sadly. I'm not permissive towards myself. Like I said, I am an aesthetic. But I'm an aesthetic that does not put my aestheticism on anybody. It's private. And so when priests come in with an interesting hairstyle, or having pulled their hair from them, I preach not being distracted to orders being done. You need to dress a certain way and have a level of decorum appropriate to the orders being done. There is modesty. In the gospel, but we work before that. It is not a barrier to come into church. It is hopefully an expectation. Of course, when you go to the temple and you receive the garment, that produces the guidelines of modesty in the church. You have to keep the garment covered. They're not to be on display. And so find very, very long stories. I'm not saying that, like I said, I'm not even proclaiming being a paragon of truth. I can almost guarantee I got the wrong attitude on many issues. But over time, I'm trying to change. I'm trying to get better. I have a serious problem with those who take things. I consider that passive aggressive behavior, and I reject it totally. Oh. And a lot of people use that as a way to get their way, and I'm really kind of, I'm sorry. there's only two ways to be in my world. You're upfront about what you want, and you're expressing your desires, or you need to keep it to yourself, shut it out of the way. And that being offended is not acceptable. That's passive aggressive. I'll get what I want by sitting here and stewing, and everybody is going to hover around me, trying to please me, while I don't tell them what my issues really are. I don't understand that. That's a level of psychosis. I don't have time for it. If you can't be straightforward about your problems and work through your problems like an adult, I said, I really don't have much to give you. I don't really have time. There's other things I need to be about. Things that I hope will be helpful, specifically helpful. You need to grow up. And you need to get straight to it. Silence is teaching. If you have a problem with something, you better say something about it. I don't have time to sit here and try to set a scared out emotional state or whatever. People have got to get to exactly what they need to get to. And offense stands in the way of that getting done. Because most of the time people won't tell you what they've been offended by. You go, you know what? To heck with you. You're not really what Mormons should be doing. Because you're not a good thing at this point. But you place yourself there.
Way of handling
existence. I think I came from circumstances where silence was deadly. Where silence pretty much my mom, I think, would probably be the first one that when things aren't going the way she wants it to. That's one of her defense mechanisms, is to retract into the past. And so it may be the kind of person that when I see that, my immediate estimation is, oh, I've offended you. I need to apologize. And they say, you don't need to apologize for anything. And they go, I'm a bad judge. Anybody needs to get concerned all the time, because I'm in bad shape anyway. So, I probably need to notice it, because they'll be asking me later, do you see this, do you see that? But, I think it's statues, and they've done something on the other side that they're displaying. So, there's that. That's it. Okay, anyway. See, I spent an inordinate amount of time trying to deal with people's issues, you know. If I don't want to, it needs to be done. I find it a distraction from what I'm thinking I try to accomplish. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I think I'm pretty willing on a regular basis to just say I'm wrong. People don't like that because they go, you're going to say that's everything. You go, yeah. You go, I just want to cut through the garbage. I just want to, you know, I want to get at the heart of the matter as quickly as I can. And I don't like a lot of weird stuff. I'm not good at it. Maybe I don't even choose to be good at it. I'm not sure if it's an inborn thing or if I just taught myself to just reject such things. Maybe I just need to be more pointed about that and saying, you know what, this is, you're obviously working through some issues and I don't have time for that. I need to find somebody else to help with that. I don't think people are very upfront at all. And that's fine. But in not being upfront, I just have to reject. It's just like, well, it must not be that important. If it was important, you'd say something. Always try to put the blame on myself, no matter where the blame is. It just saves me time. Okay, you know what? I think I am going to do a little entertainment. Oh, God. So, going on here. Scan now. ahead and do the install. And turn agent policy.
Oh, I'm still recording. And I'm still know that I'm recording. Oh my gosh. Okay.